It is Sunday morning. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. Good morning, Wo.
Hi, Marty. Good morning.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm a little bit concerned this morning because I'm not bringing my normal silky smooth radio voice to your show with this bug I'm battling. I just hope if I start hacking or coughing, you have the big hook that Milton Berle used to have on his show.
We got the button. Okay. We have the button, believe me.
You can push that button.
I've used it in my life before. You know that.
Okay.
After all these years, there's always something going on. But you'll hear it from the guys in the clubhouse today. You'll hear it in the coaches' room.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. They're listening.
All right. First of all, Chris Heston. Goes today for baseball history. And, you know, again, looking back into the little historical part of this thing, and John Miller did a great job yesterday talking about it. Johnny Vandermeer did it in 1938, and the second no-hitter was the first night game at Ebbets Field. So who knows what the ball looked like coming out of his hand. But Ewell Blackwell, his teammate in 47, took the second no-hitter to 8 1/3. Eddie Stanky hit a ground ball up the middle to do it. But no hitters for you. It's sort of commonplace now for this ball club, or are they still exciting to see it?
Well, they're definitely exciting to see. But we have had our share of them. I think, you know, I went into minor leagues throughout my career with the major leagues sprinkled in there as well, 10, 11 years, and only played in one game, you know, behind a pitcher. It was, I think it was Dan Fowler. His dad was a pitcher up in Tacoma, Washington. I was with the Hawaii Islanders, the Pirates AAA, and played second base that day for the no-hitter. But we've had a bunch. We've had a bunch here now, and they never get old, and they are always special. You know, as you said, Heston has an opportunity today to be the only guy this year that has a chance to go two back-to-back, and that doesn't happen very often, so it's exciting to see.
Yes, 13th Major League start. I mean, he's got a no-hitter already, and it's one of the you know, the fewest starts in the history of the game, and he had great stuff, though, and as you sit now, you've been through a bunch of them, and you've been through as a player, as a coach, and certainly in your career. When does it start to get interesting for you?
I think the seventh inning. Okay. You know, when you get through the seventh, now there becomes an expectation that you're going to have a no hitter. I mean, it's in the back of your mind. A guy's five innings, but as you saw, you know, ourselves, we didn't have a hit the last two games through five innings, and you see that quite frequently. But when a pitcher gets through the seventh, now I think everybody's expectation is ratcheted up even more so than it was in the sixth inning, saying he just needs six outs, and you really feel it can become a reality.
How about Kane's perfect game? We celebrated that anniversary yesterday. I asked fans to call in some good remembrances of that. What about for you?
That was as good as it gets for me. I've never been involved in a perfect game, and you talk about the excitement and the electricity of a guy doing something, and that was at the top of the list. Because it was a perfect game. I mean, a no-hitter, would have felt as good, but a perfect game.
Really?
So, you know, you're pulling for him so hard. And, you know, all the guys on the field. And I saw the same thing with Heston in New York. There's a certain energy. You know, the game gets into the sixth, seventh inning, and the fielders, everybody's at the top of their game. And, you know, I think Crawford went for one ball in the hole. He went for that ball like there's no way he was going to let that thing get through. So it's special, and we're very fortunate to be able to see him.
Yeah, a very exciting part of it. Now, do you get involved with the rituals? Do you have certain superstitions that you go through?
Well, you know, you stay away from the starter. I think throughout that game, I'm sure they showed Heston probably sitting by himself many times. It's the same thing. I don't want to mention it, although me and Roberto Kelly have mentioned it on occasion, sometimes, you know, trying to go the opposite directions and fool the baseball gods into having to be a no-hitter. But, no, you know, you don't want to mention it. You don't want to talk about it. So those types of things. And you just want to make sure that you give the guy every opportunity to get the no-hitter.
Do you even make contact with eye contact?
Try not to. You know, at that point, you know, he's pitching. I'm not involved with that end of it. It's more watching the defense, make sure we're doing everything we can. You know, the toughest decision for me is if a guy's going to bunt or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came up in New York. You know, a lot of people say, and I've heard you talk about it on your show, do you bunt to break up a no-hitter? And, you know, in Heston's case, he had some bunters in the ninth inning come up, and we're up 5-0. And, you know, you like to think that most baseball people will not bunt. Yeah. You know, if the game's out of hand, five runs, and you're not going to steal, you shouldn't try to bunt to break up the no-hitter. I think everybody would agree with that. But you always have a rogue player or a crazy guy that you don't know that doesn't know that etiquette. It could be a young guy or a guy who's never been involved with it. So you're forced to protect it a little bit, because if he does drop it down, what are you going to say? Oh, no, no, do over, you know? No, so you have to stay up. And your biggest fear is we're staying up to protect some crazy guy trying to bunt because he doesn't know proper etiquette. And then the guy hits the ball by the third baseman.
Wow.
So you would feel awful. So, you know, little things like that do surface during the game.
Did you do that with Duffy? Did you have to get him aware that the bunt could
happen? Yes, we did. I had him roll back, just show up and go back, just to take that thought away. But, you know, again, I didn't want to leave him up because you're going to say, what are you doing? You know, hit the ball by him and when it's no hitter. But you never know. I mean, I've seen it all in this game. Yeah. You know, you could throw the etiquette out the window sometimes when you're in the heat of competition and you have certain players on the other side. And everybody views things a little bit differently.
Yeah. Well, it came up with Ben Davis. Remember the catcher for the Padres, Curt Schilling, had the no hitter. And see, now I brought this up on the show, and I firmly believe if it's a nothing-nothing game or a 1-0 game, and you got a guy coming up in the 7th or 8th inning, you can bunt. It's baseball. You don't have to stop playing baseball. Ben Davis, I think it was a 3-0 game for him, and he got the bunt down on Schilling, and they took a lot of heat for that, and I think I can understand that a little bit more. But nothing-nothing or 1-run game, why not?
I'm with you, Marty. Look, it all depends where you come from. I mean,
from Brooklyn.
You come from Brooklyn. Okay, so people in Brooklyn, like my mom, she would bunt.
Exactly.
In that situation.
Forget about it.
Well, if you're playing to win the game, you're going to do whatever you want to win the game. And when I came up in the game, that was the name of the game. Win the game.
Yeah.
To your point, you know, what happens if it's the 7th game of the World Series and you're losing 4-0 in the 9th inning and the pitcher's got a no-hitter going? Are you not going to bunt to try to win the game?
Yeah.
My point is, if you're playing to win, you play to win.
Okay.
Now, I do agree that, you know, they're up by 5 runs, that you shouldn't do it. But if the defensive team is going to give you the bunt and you're winning 3-0, the guy has a no-hitter, I can't fault the opposition if they play to win the game.
Well, look at Posey yesterday dropping down a bunt he tried in the 9th inning. I don't think I've ever seen him do that before. I thought it was a good play.
It's a smart
play. Why not?
Play.
You're down 4-2. You got Ziegler, who is, you know, the submariner. The third baseman's playing in left field. He's not even thinking about
right.
it. And if Posey can't run, but if he gets it past the pitcher, he's got a hit.
It's a smart play. I mean, you know, again, playing to win the game, 7th, 8th, 9th, you always want to get the tying run to the plate.
Yeah.
So we're down by 2. He could hit the ball out. We're still down by 1.
Right.
He could hit a rocket right at somebody, hit the ball hard, which he did, and he doesn't get on base. But if he's confident that he can get the bunt down and bring the tying run to the plate, it's a great play. I'd like to see more guys with that mindset to try to get on base, to get the tying run to the plate, to give us a chance to tie the game.
Yeah, I liked it. In fact, the ball he hit was just a rocket to third.
Right.
And I said to myself, that's the way you play third base. That ball was not going to go through that guy. His chest was there. He was not going to move at third base.
Yeah, yeah, he made a couple nice plays there. And as you said, we hit some balls hard in the game. Excuse me.
Yeah.
As we did the night before, Aoki's ball that was hit, that Harold was playing third,
cow.
That jumped up and snagged that, turned it into a double play to preserve the, you know, the no-hitter at the time. But that would have been a run in, and it could have changed the whole complexion of that game. It would have changed the whole complexion of that game. We would have scored and had men in scoring position. We ended up losing that game 1-0. So that's how fleeting winning can be.
Yeah, it's at one moment during a game. Ron Wotus with us, the bench coach of the Giants. All right, let's go to school a little bit with you in that game. Duffy gets in no man's land around second base. And just to set it up, he's on second. He gets there in a wild pitch. And now Maxwell had struck out, but McGee is up. And the infield's kind of back. But the second baseman may be over near the bag a little bit. So McGee hits. If Maxwell had gotten the guy over, now the infield's in. That McGee's a hit because that ball's through the infield. So unfortunate for McGee. But the ground ball's to second. He hits it hard. What happens with Duffy and what should have happened?
Well, it's sometimes, you know, you go over those plays, you know, your whole life as a base runner. And, you know, one thing Duffy's trying to do, he's trying to get a good secondary lead to try to score. And there's certain times When you can't get doubled off, if you look to see where the fielders are playing, you may shorten your secondary lead, because if a ball's hit hard, it's typically done more at first base and at third base because you don't have the reaction time. Say you have bases loaded and you don't want to get doubled off, you might shorten your secondary lead. So a rocket right to the first baseman who's standing behind you can't step on the base. But at second base, typically, it's more difficult to shorten your lead in that scenario. We're down 4-2. We want to get the run in. He's taking a normal secondary lead. So what happened to him, really, was he thought the ball, and it was in the air. He knew where the fielder was, but the ball was in the air, and he thought that it might be caught in the air. So he hesitated. So he didn't break right to third because he wasn't sure, because he didn't want to get doubled off. The right thought process. And now once the ball hits the dirt, he looks back and the second baseman is closer to second than he is, and he's in no man's land.
Got it.
That's a play that's probably happened to many of us in the game, that a lot of times you could say it's not a bonehead play, it's just the circumstances, and you got caught because he wasn't able to get the jump that he wanted, and he had a freeze on the ball, and he's in no man's land.
Got it. All right, so the ball's in the air, so he's got a freeze because he may have to go back to the bag. It hits the dirt, now he's in the middle, and he can't get back in time, and they hang him up.
Right, and a lot of people will say, and you know, Flan used to always say, was here, well, you don't freeze on a line drive, you go back on a line drive. Because if you take a good secondary lead and you freeze, you're still in no man's land. Okay. But on that ball, it happens more at second because you got a bigger lead at second. And when you take your secondary lead, you're off the base a little bit more. So in reality, if he could have reacted straight back, and now the ball's on the ground, people are going, what is he doing? He's running back to the base. So it was a tough read.
Yeah.
He got caught there, and it can be a difficult play when you're out there, that type of ball.
All right, that's the professor. Very good. Yeah, very good. Because, you know, thinking about it, say, well, I didn't realize that part, that the ball was in the air and he had a freeze because of that. I thought maybe it just wasn't a good read on the grounder. But
yeah, well, it was, you know, it one hopped him, it looked like a grounder, but it was started in the air, and, you know, the infielder's in a little bit, so, yeah, difficult read.
All right, plus that inning, you know, you're playing with a short bench now, and you've got Maxwell up there. His job is to get the guy to third. He's a number eight hitter. He's a big guy. I don't know. People say, well, why doesn't he bunt? But sometimes you can't put someone in that position if that's not their comfort zone.
Well, yeah, he hasn't done a whole lot of bunting in his career, and actually he could. He's not a bad bunter, but you know, you hate to give away outs. He has power, and you know, a lot of times you want these guys just not to get him the third. You want him to drive the ball the third. You know, you want him to hit the ball on the gap the other way, or you know, hit it out. So it depends on what you want, you know, as a manager in that situation, and what you're capable of doing, your player's capable of doing. And with the power Maxwell has, you know, I know Boach would much rather see these guys drive the ball the other way and try to get on base and get the job done. So it didn't happen, and that's part of the game.
All right, Ron Wotus with us. A big basketball game today. The Warriors play today, and we'll have a very short post game. Believe me, today. This will be one of those post games like Dwayne Kuiper did the other night. He did the post game, the entire post game in about 4 minutes, because these guys were tired and ready to go home. So my question is this, even in the headlines today, Warriors will not say what the starting lineup's going to be, what it will be. It's all this big mystery. Different than baseball. Baseball, you know who you're going to face. You know who the pitcher is. Now, my question to you, ever been involved in that gamesmanship where they pulled the pitcher in the first inning or the first batter or warmed up two guys so you didn't know what was going to be coming? Or is baseball just an open book where you just know everything?
Yeah, I want to say that there's been a couple of times that it was iffy, but never two guys warming up at the same time. I've been involved with a couple of times where they announced their starter, and the guy only goes two innings, and then they bring, you know, he's a right-handed starter. They announce him, so you stack your lineup with lefties. He only goes two innings, and then they bring the lefty in, you know. And I can't remember the scenario like that, but I remember it's a courtesy, and it's a courtesy to announce your pitcher. I guess years ago they didn't do that, right?
Oh, I could tell you in the World Series, but it's a very famous play in 1929. Connie Mack. You know, this game was figured out, well, about 120 years ago. Believe me, it's the same game. But if it's Maxwell not getting the guy over, it was Eddie Collins not getting the guy over in 1909. So it's 1929, and Connie Mack has got the Philadelphia A's, and he's facing this tremendous offensive team in the Chicago Cubs. And he has his pitcher, Howard Emke, and he's a right-hander. Now, he should have thrown the lefty, Lefty Grove, the Hall of Famer. But he didn't want to throw Lefty Grove, so he sends Howard Emke for a month to go watch the Cubs, Now, Emke's an older veteran. It'd be like he's sending, Lincecum. Now, it was someone even older than that, bringing back Jason Schmidt and sending him. So they send Emke to watch the Cubs for a month. And then on the day of the first game of the World Series, he has Emke warming up under the stands. So no one could see him warming up. He sends Howard Emke out to the mound. The Cubs are flabbergasted, and he sets a World Series record for strikeouts, and they win the game.
Right, yeah.
Can you imagine this happening to you guys?
No, I can't. Not today. Not today's world. not the courtesies that we provide the other team and the press and everybody else involved. And I saw what Steve Kerr did, and, you know, I respect him a lot for making that decision. You know, you always guard against that as a coach, you know. You know, how much information you want to give, what's too much? And if you don't have to announce your lineup to a certain time, why do it? Why do it? But in baseball, you know, the starting pitcher, you need to let the other team know who's starting the game. That's the way it's been done now for how many years? I don't think it's ever gone the other way, as to your story, in a long, long time, and I don't expect it will.
No, but I've seen before, and I think this is back to Gene Mauk or people like that, where they would start a guy for one batter.
Right.
And then, you know, you have your stack, your lineup with righties, and all of a sudden they bring a righty in after the first batter. I've seen that.
Yeah. Those days seem to be gone. You know, nobody knows.
How would you like to do that? What would you think of that?
Well, I think that you're going to leave yourself open in today's game for, you know, a lot of criticism. And the gamemanships, we've talked about it before. I think a lot of it is gone.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is gone. You know, I watched Kimbrel pitch last night at the end of the Dodgers game, and you look at his hat, and he's got all that rosin up on his hat, and that's not supposed to be there. I mean, it's clear as a bell. We've talked about it before, and nothing happens, and that goes into the whole argument. Do you want the pitchers to have a grip or to be wild, et cetera, et cetera? The game's evolving. It's changed from years ago, and things are different.
All right. Ron Wotus with us, the bench coach. Let's take a break. We'll take a little drink here and get the voice. You're doing well. You're doing well. Nope.
No, I'm hacking. That's good.
Absolutely no problem. All right. We'll take a break. I want to ask you a little bit about the All-Star game. And if you could change the way it's played, in other words, maybe not the selection process, but just the way the game's played, it is an exhibition. It does mean something. You're going there again this year. You'll be in Cincinnati. You're getting old at this stuff. But if you could change the game a little bit as an exhibition, what would you do? I want to ask you about that. All right, more coming up right here on the Sports Leader.
KNBR 680.